Hello and welcome to the United Stand podcast. Flex is back with me after a week off.
Yes, back man, back once again. Been super, super busy, but very important that we come back for you lot. Everyone loves the podcast, so we're going to keep giving it to you.
Look, we're going to start off with some what I would say is exclusive news around Manchester United. It's interesting running the United Stand because it is fan content, but the problem is, the bigger you get, the more people get in contact with you. And look, I'm not going to lie to you and say, oh, we're the biggest fan channel in the world and nobody's ever contacted us who's credible. Sometimes we do get that. Sometimes you get people that you take it with a pinch of salt, but we've got some stuff around Manchester United over the last sort of 14 days that I wanted to bring in on the podcast because I think it works better on here. Some of this will be news to you, Flex. Some of it won't be. But we're going to start. I mean, look, I have had somebody who in the past has been pretty bang on. And I mean, it's not rocket science what they're talking about. I mean, I want to talk about the sale in a minute or two as well. Because, let's talk about the sale first. And then I'll talk about these bits of information about United, which are really, really interesting. With regards to the sale, we had one of our fan cammers, unfortunately, Saeed, saying, I know for a fact we're going to be sold to the Saudis. Unfortunately, I don't know, I think Saeed's either lying or he's outed himself as having a crap sauce. Probably HP or ketchup, I don't know. But the reality is, with Manchester United and this Saudi thing, I think that maybe there is some interest from Saudi Arabia, but there's probably a lot of people who want to buy Manchester United. The unofficial official line, because the club will never come out and say it because it will cause too much of an uproar, is that the club is not for sale. It's not for sale at all. They were in Saudi Arabia to negotiate further sort of deals and brand deals, etc., which was always planned, and that this Saudi Arabian buyout is not there. The only way that the Glazers would sell Manchester United is if they got a ridiculous offer around $4
billion. Yeah, but they could get that off the Saudis. They can.
But what I'm saying is all this rumour that we're going to be bought by the Saudis, it is not true. It's not true at all. And unfortunately, we've got to... And I feel sorry for the fan base. I'd love the Glazers to go.
Yeah.
But the we're so desperate. And I said this was the problem on Friday night. We're so desperate to be sold. There's the moral question about the Saudis, which I don't want to get into because it's not even true that they're going to buy us. But the sad thing is, what we have done with Saudis in trending on Friday night is... We've taken the piss out of Man City for years, and then on Friday night, most of the fan base has exposed itself as going, oh, I don't care if it's oil money, I'll have it. And then we're not going to get the oil money. So Man City fans are just sat laughing at us.
I don't think we're going to get taken over. Do I think the Saudis could afford $3 billion, $4 billion? Absolutely. Of course they can. These are multi-billionaires. There's a different level of money. Like, you can have millionaires, you can be just about a billionaire in assets and stuff, but I think these guys, these types of owners are different kettles of fish when you're looking at royal families of other countries and, you know, hugely successful billionaire companies from other countries of the Far East and stuff like that. It's a different level of money. So I agree in terms of they'll be able to afford it, but I'm not getting roped into thinking it's going to happen, to be honest with you. On the Flex and Rant show, which is kind of coming out today. Oh, there's the phone going.
It's the Saudis.
Yeah, it's not. It's Robbie, actually.
He's going to buy it. He can afford it.
Yeah, exactly. Don Robbie say that he's going to buy Man United right now. I think that... Look, the Glazers... Because, look, if you think about it, the Glazers are money-grabbing bastards, if I can say that. Yeah, they're interested about the money. You look at the loans that they've taken out against the club in order to purchase the club, shows you everything about their intention, and then following on from that, how they've used the club as like a cash cow. So they're all about their money. We know that. They're all about their paper. I think if it was to come in, they would have something to consider more than they ever have done before. What did they buy it for? $600 million?
And, on debt, yeah.
On debt. And refinance or remortgage whatever they had to do to get it, and they could sell it all these years later for what, $3-4 billion? Like, they're making a huge profit, so they're all about their money. So I do think there's something in it. I don't think there's this much smoke without any fire. The club, like you said, the club's never going to go and say, well, yeah, we are looking at offers, we were just over there discussing. They're never ever ever going to say that. So the fact that they've come out and said to us, oh, we were out there on business anyway. That's just, they say that for fucking transfers, let alone fucking selling the club. Like, I don't 100% buy that. I think there is something in it, but I don't think it's going to happen right now. And in terms of when you said about saying about the money and we don't care where it comes from, and now we've got custard pie on our face because the City fans are laughing at us, I think the difference is that we've been something before that. we are our own self-fulfilling club. Like, we make our own money, we generate our own funds and make our own record amounts of income. We're shit and we're still making so much money. Yes, it will start to dip not being in Champions League once more, and probably maybe not even Europa this year, and that will start to affect things here and there, but we're still going to be quite a powerhouse. And I think the difference between us and them is that they were nothing on the dot of football, world football. They were piss all, and then the Saudis came and made them something. I think if Saudis came to Manchester United, which again we spoke about on Flex of Rancho, I don't want to say too much, but we could actually start being empowered to spend our own money. Because let's not get it twisted, Manchester United itself, without shitloads of investment, without shitloads of funds to be available, makes its own money. I just don't think it spends its own money because the Glazers want it. The Glazers want it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think what the Saudis would enable us to actually do, if they did come in with a huge, huge offer, which they probably wouldn't actually have to spend as much money of their own money on transfers as they think. They could just enable the club to use its own. It depends how much profits they want to take out. So for me, I don't really give a shit that City fans are going to say, oh, now look, you're like us. Because no, we're not like you. You were fuck all before you got the Saudi money. You didn't win nothing. No one knew who you were in world football. And the Saudis came and made your club. So we ain't like them.
I think the sad thing there is that you've spent 2 minutes justifying a sale that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, no, it probably won't.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's all weekend, it's all I've read. And it's sad, because we're all justifying in our head how we would do it. We're a bigger club. And you're right. Everything you've said there is right. And the sad thing is, the club since thinks so little of the fans. They've allowed you, me, everybody over the weekend to create this fantasy in our head of, yeah, I can deal with it. I can deal with it. And they'd run the club like City run their club, and we'd get back on top. Yeah, totally agree. Thumbs up to absolutely everything. The sad thing is it's not going to happen because there is no appetite from Manchester United to sell. And that's the thing. You know, if you've got a really nice car on your drive and I want to buy it and I've got the money to buy it, and you're like, yeah, it is a car and that's a really good offer, but I'll tell you what, I ain't selling it. I'm not selling it because it's going to become more and more valuable. And we know with Manchester United that actually it's probably going to drop in value. The shares are dropping. But this goes on to the second thing I've been told. This is not a source from Manchester United, so take it with a pinch of salt, but it is somebody who has had information from Manchester United in the past, and they speak to us quite regularly. And they've said that the issue with Manchester United at the moment, and this is quite damning against Manchester United and quite interesting if it's true for United fans, is that United are in chaos. From top to bottom, it's self-preservation within that football club. There is chaos reigning within the club. Nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody's looking after their own interests. From top to bottom, it's run like bloody Stoke City. There is no level of competence or experience in that club. And ultimately, everybody, the same message that's being put out publicly is the same message that's going round in memos and everything within the club, that in the future things are going to get better, let's just hang on in there. And that is one of the reasons the Glazers don't want to sell, because they know that, yeah, they could sell it now, but they really do believe that in the future they're going to get back to where they were in 2016, which was our biggest ever value of the club share price. So it's only 3 years ago. And effectively, I mean, this is really interesting, Flex. It's like you've got Ed Woodward. Obviously, we've had these, you know, we did that exclusive with the fanzine a couple of weeks ago. He's released a lot into the press trying to protect himself. And it's very interesting that Ed Woodward, let's start with him, has said that I'm nothing to do with signing players. I just sign it off when the manager tells me what to do. And then yesterday, we've got a story from Manchester Evening News, which has clearly come from the club, saying that Ed Woodward wanted to sign Varane and Verratti, but Mourinho didn't want him to. So what is it, Ed? You do sign the players or you don't sign the players. And this is it. They take fans for fools because they're chucking out every little bit of different information, hoping something will stick with the fan base. Yeah. And it is all about self-preservation. And that is why we won't be sold. And that is why I think things are going to get worse, because everybody is, instead of, there's no leadership in that club. We've known this for a long time. And this is coming out from lots of different sources now. There's no leadership in Manchester United. It's all about self-preservation. And if you look at Ed Woodward, and I'm going to talk about the players and Solskjaer and the Glazers as well, all it seems to be at United is Operation Propaganda. They're desperate. They're desperate for the press, for the fans to jump on board with their positive mantra. So it's all about propaganda, trying to turn the tide against them, instead of looking at why is the tide turning. You know, it's not because Ed Woodward's going bold. It's not because Ed Woodward's a banker. It's because Manchester United Football Club are failing consistently. That's why the fans are bothered. That's why the media are starting to look at it. But the club absolutely are determined that what they're doing is right, and they're doing everything in their power to self-preservate themselves, which to me is just, it makes sense, but it's really, really sad again, because what that club needs is some harsh lessons and leadership from the club to sort of stand up and say, this is unacceptable, we are going to change things.
Yeah, it means,
you know,
it means
we can't keep talking about the future.
Big, it needs massive decisions being made, and it's almost like they're... It shows us that, well, if it's going this badly on the pitch, yeah, and you're not changing anything upstairs, it means that you're happy with something. Do you get that? Like the fact that you're not changing anything under these circumstances means...
Well, it's
that,
self-preservation, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're right. That's the problem.
You're right. That's what
Who's
I mean.
Who's the fall guy?
Nobody wants to... Nobody's taking a hit. Nobody's, you know, putting their foot down and saying, right, you know what? You are accountable for X, Y, and Z. You're out. They're making it easy to blame players who are subpar and should never have been bought in the first place, or who have been kept there too long, and we end up as fans because we see them week in, week out on the pitch. You know, Ashley Young will take the brunt of it. Matic will take the brunt of it. Jesse Lingard will take the brunt of it, which I get it. They're footballers and they're not producing. But when you think about it, these decisions to not reinvest or invest properly or to move players out in these areas, that can't be just the managers. It can't be. And even if it is, then these managers that are being brought there, who's bringing them? And it's right what you say about the self-preservation, because it's like little things are drip-fed into the media to suit the narrative at that time. So at that time where, what's his face? Woodward is saying, it's not me. The manager basically has full autonomy over everything, what's going on. It's not me. Then he said another time, when along the lines of that, he's like, we have got football people making decisions. I think it's really disrespectful to the people that are in those positions, that they're being questioned. You know, they're good at their jobs, etc. Again, signifying that it's not him and that there are specialists in football positions within the club. And then, like you said, the most recent comments of saying, well, actually, yeah, I wanted to sign this player. I wanted to sign that. It was actually Jose. So then now you're to feed the narrative, you're trying to make yourself look like the victim. To say, actually, I am trying to sign the players, and look at the players I tried to sign, they're very good and they would have been good, but the manager stopped me. So then you're admitting that you had no say over the manager, and that he overruled you, which should happen in a football case, but then you're trying to blame it on him because he's not here anymore, because it went to shit. So what are you going to do next then when Solskjaer leaves? Say, oh, well, in that summer we were going to get Dybala, we were going to get Bruno Fernandes, but Ollie said he was happy with his squad. That sounds like something he's fucking probably going to say then. So I don't buy it. And the thing is, we are being taken for fools, but the problem that Manchester United now have, which they're desperately trying to fix, is that the fans don't buy the shit no more, Mark. They don't buy it. No one's buying it, man. There's not one fan. Yes, there's Ollie in, there's Ollie out, there's Matic in, there's bring back Mata, there's Pereira's not good enough, there's Lingard will come good, there's Rashford still got some leg, like can do better. Then there's Rashford's crap. There's all of that amongst the fans. But what there isn't is that, nah, it's not actually Ed Woodward's fault. The Glazers have invested nearly £1 billion. They're doing the right thing. It's just the manager. There isn't any of that. The fans are not fooled. One thing we can all agree on, because football is subjective, but within Manchester United and the fan base, I've never come across a fan who's said, and I've spoken to a hell of a lot of fans, as has you, as has anyone listening to this. We're all Manchester United fans.
Well, I'm not going to out them, but we've spoken to top Reds from Manchester, and I don't think that matters in the fan base, but even they, who are supposedly 100% buying out, they're not.
They won't
vocally say it, but they're not.
Yeah. No, they're not. No. And that's what we, again, in the Flex and Rancho, we made a laugh about it, but, you know, these guys, people who, I say guys, could be women as well, kids who want to come on and blame fan channels and say, yeah, you're this, you're that, you're not a real fan because all you're doing is slagging off this. And they're the same guys in their WhatsApp group saying flipping Jesse Lingard shit. They're the same guys walking home from the game saying out loud, Jesse Lingard needs to focus on his fucking football and not be on that Instagram and pull Pogba this and fucking, they're slagging off the players every fucking week. Yeah,
they just won't do it public.
It's the same people who don't bat an eyelid to TalkSport who literally set the poll up and say, should Ole Gunnar Solskjaer be sacked? And when John Bloggs from fucking Salford rings in and says that at the end of the day, he's got a goal. He's out of his depth. He's a, you know, they're not embarrassing. So you're right. It's like a saving face almost. And sometimes in the fan base, and this is a completely different subject, but sometimes there's self-preservation within the fucking fan base, which pisses me off in itself. But that's a different story.
It is. And I mean, just to swing it back to Manchester United. Yeah. I mean, look, we. It's funny because some fans will say about certain websites, fan channels and fanzines that they're on the payroll because they're getting access to the club or they're doing interviews with the club and everything like that. I mean, as far as I know, that's total bollocks. I think that would be massively dangerous for Manchester United to be paying off websites and fanzines. But what I would say from our experience is there's a lot of people who work at Manchester United that are fantastic people, probably most of them, and they've all got jobs to look after for themselves, 100%. And ultimately if they do anything wrong they'll be sacked. But what is very sad and is not in doubt is that the way Manchester United are operating at the moment, and this is across the media, it's not just fan channels and websites and fanzines, this is the media as well, you're either with us or you're against us, and all they are interested in is working with people who will spin a positive line about Manchester United. If you go against the grain, which the United stand is always going to, isn't it, because we're going to be honest and we're not doing well at the moment, then they see you as an enemy, and they see the fans as an enemy at the moment, because they are frustrated within Manchester United and angry that the fans are frustrated and angry with the situation. They're like, well, we're telling you what's going to happen in the future. Just believe us. And
evidence.
It goes back to that self-preservation thing. They are so self-absorbed. That's the word. They are so self-absorbed with themselves that they just think we should all be there like lapdogs with our tongues out, you know, panting and waiting for them to pat us with more shit. It's like the club is in a mess. It's in the worst position it's been in since 1986, but it's definitely the worst it's been in my lifetime. And yet, there's no accountability. It's all about spin our positive bullshit and we'll give you a bit more information from the club. If you're not going to do that, we're going to close the door on you and try and ignore you. But unfortunately, the knocks are getting louder and louder. And you mentioned Lingard there. We've spoken about Woodward. The issue is, I think if anybody looked at Manchester United, whether it's Gary Neville, us, the fans listening, whoever, they would go, it's not just changing the manager, it's not just changing the players, it's total restructure from top to bottom. 100%. But when you look at this self-preservation thing, and I was told this, I'm sort of quoting what I was told here. They said, well, who's going to go, right? The Glazers aren't going to go. They own the club. They don't want to go. So they're not going to change. So you're not going to change your leadership. Woodward's not going to go, the chief executive who runs it, because he loves the job. He loves the power. The Glazers love him. He's making a lot of money. He's never going to go. So straight away, you're not losing your owner. You're not losing your chief executive. They're not going to sack Ollie because Ollie is seen by them as the buffer that protects them because he's a legend of the club. And if it was Mourinho, they've seen what would have happened. There'd be chance for Mourinho out at every game at the moment. But because it's Ollie, he protects them. So they love Ollie, and he's cheaper than Mourinho, and he just goes along with what they want. You know, he needed to spend $200 million in the summer.
Turn on as well.
Yeah, he needed to spend $200 million in the summer, but he's so happy to be in a job, smiley happy, that they only spent $60 on him. So they're not going to get rid of Ollie. So the manager, the chief executive, the board, they're not going to go. And then you're left with the players. They love Lingard. They love Rashi. They love Pogba. They love all these players because they make them a lot of money because, you know, Lingard really, as a footballer over the last 2 years, has been about as good as Jemba Jemba. But off the pitch, Lingard's as good as Messi because he connects with the youth. And he makes them a lot of money.
He's brilliant. He's brilliant off the pitch. I like Lingard.
Yeah, and the same with people like Mata and Rashi and everyone like that. Yeah. So there's your problem. Everybody's looking after each other because behind the scenes, you know, I would argue they don't give a shit about the fans or the media because actually behind closed doors, they're all making a lot of money. Yes. I mean, you've seen it with Rashford's tweet yesterday. Oh, you know, it's the same old thing. We go again, next couple of games. Yeah. But there's massive frustration in the fan base. But when you... This person told me, nothing's changing at the club.
No,
they're just
hoping
to ride it out because their theory is, yeah, it's bad, but nothing ever lasts forever. It'll get better, but nothing's going to change.
No, until there's
within the club structure.
Yeah, within the club. I don't think all of the players don't care. I think someone like Rashford.
I think they all care.
I think they do care about the fans. I don't think any professional goes onto the pitch wanting to lose, wanting to play shit, wanting to not be able to create chances. I just think that it proves the ineptness of the surroundings that they have as a group of colleagues. You know, it could be the same. And a lot of things in football are transferable into real life worlds of work. If you're in an office, you might love your job. You might love being a recruitment consultant or an IT specialist or something. But if your network around you and the hierarchy is not good, the company's not going to do good. The company could go bust and you could be the best IT consultant ever, but you might have to move because there's nothing there. You don't enjoy going into work and not being able to do your job properly. So I don't think they enjoy it, but at the same time, they don't have the tools to get out of it themselves. Rashford can't just turn into Mbappe. Lingard can't just turn into fucking Bruno Fernandes or
Mark Noble would do.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, McTominay is trying to turn into Busquets / Pirlo, but he can't. Fred's trying. Like they ain't got it in the locker, mate. They have not got it. So, and tactically, this is on Football Matters, we're not good enough. We're not seeing enough impact from those group of coaches, Ollie included. So I think that's where the players are at. I think it hurts hurts them to a certain degree. It's always going to hurt them maybe a little bit less than it does us, you know, as fans who follow it day in, day out, spend our money on it, follow it, go to it, whatever, invest time and energy. Whereas, yeah, there is that bit of after the couple of hours after the game, they're probably all right again because they're back in training the next morning. It's outside, out of mind. You focus on the next game. So, but yeah, the self-preservation running through the whole thing, really. And it until anything changes above board, and this is why the whole Ollie in, Ollie out thing, it's like, I get that maybe in the short term, the form could change because there could be a slight better coach. But under this infrastructure, I don't think many coaches are thriving. I really don't. Bring Brendan Rodgers into this environment with this board, with this CEO. I don't think he gets what he wants. I don't think he gets the support or the backing that he needs. I don't think he has the relationship he would want with owners. You look at Leicester's owners and obviously what happened to Mr. Vichai, but how it continued though. Look at the legacy left behind that his son was able to step right into it and go again. Like that just shows how strong their structure is, that they can lose the person at the head of it, or you know, you don't know how much involvement. Maybe he's got it the right way around, Mr. Vichai. Maybe he's the head of it in terms of monetary funding everything, but he had the right people in place to make the right decisions. But yeah, what it did was make it a seamless transition, obviously not in the circumstances that they wanted, God rest his soul, but his son was able to step into his shoes, and what's changed? If anything, they've got better. Do you know what I mean? So that proves that the structure, the blueprint should be the blueprint, and any manager should be able to come and pass through it. I know it went wrong with Claude Puel, etc., etc. All they needed to do was find the right manager. They had the infrastructure. That proves it. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, the changing of a manager with that club will change the course, whereas with United, you're saying it's probably not going to change.
Exactly, exactly.
It's, you know, there is a helplessness to Manchester United. I mean, we do the United stand a lot. You're doing the fan cams, and you know, fans are sort of saying, well, what can we do? And look, there's not always an answer. And I think that's the problem with United at the moment. The changing of the manager, which we'll talk about in a minute. We've had four managers. What needs to change at Manchester United is the way that it's run and the structure. And, you know, you can be as severe as Glazers out, or you can be, they need to change it themselves. But to move on from what that information that we've got is, the self-preservation that runs within that club, nothing's about to change soon. The only thing that's going to help the club is a miracle, which is that Ollie suddenly starts winning loads of games and the club gets back to where it is under this current structure, which would mean Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer would almost have to be Sir Alex reincarnated, because the only reason we were successful for so many years is that we had the greatest sporting manager there's ever been, who despite a poor structure above him could still be successful. So I don't think that, sadly, it's a sad situation, and I don't think it's going to get any better, because the structure in that football club is as bad as a Leeds United when they got relegated, as a Stoke City at the moment. The structure of the football club from top to bottom is a disgrace, and it's not going to get any better, because there's nobody in that football club who cares about the club enough to actually put their head up and say, or hand up and say, this is unacceptable, we are failing, we need to change the structure of this football club. What they're doing is they're saying, this isn't working, we're not sacking any of our mates, we're going to stay as we are, let's just try something new. And that's not accountability, and that's not change that's going to make us develop. But you spoke about sold. And I was also told as well, I mean, this isn't obviously breaking news at all, but I was told that Pogba's definitely leaving. There's talk that, you know, there's a bit of a breakdown in relationships at Manchester United.
That's,
I think, ultimately that just
knows that.
I think it just comes down to the fact that he, Pogba, looked at the summer, and I agree with this, that Lukaku acted quite badly, Sanchez acted quite badly, and they both got moves away, one alone and one a permanent move. He acted respectfully. You know, there was that talk that he wasn't going to go on the tour. He went on the tour and still didn't get his move. And I think that, you know, Manchester United played hardball, but they didn't realise that a player can be injured for 3 months. And we've already had word that this injury Pogba's got is not one that a doctor can say how long it's going to be, because it's in the player's pain threshold as to whether they're back or not.
Yeah, so he can control the narrative, can't he?
Yeah, and I think that's what he's doing. And I don't really blame Pogba in some ways, because you can't on one hand say the structure of the football club's broken and it needs to change, and then back that structure in the way that they've treated Paul Pogba. I think Pogba will wear a United shirt again, but
yeah,
I don't think
Pogba's again this season. He's not going to go in January. He's definitely going to go in January. But there will be an agreement in principle that he's going to go. Which, look, I'm almost bored of the Pogba thing. To be honest,
he should have gone in the summer. I think.
Should have gone in the summer. We all said it, and to be fair, I actually said there was no way back after he said he was looking at new opportunities or however the fuck he said. I'm one of Pogba's biggest supporters. I think he's got bags
of ability. Just to jump
Yeah,
you know, on that. So you thought that, I thought that. I didn't even dislike Pogba. I just thought, you know, he's right to want to leave.
Yeah, just go.
But the board
made him
decided to keep Pogba and not buy midfielders.
Yeah.
Like.
That's
what
I'm saying.
What was
it
in their head there?
The
why didn't they
do that? The ineptness of the structure of this club. Like, if you... Because that's why... When I remember doing the shows around that time when he just said it. He was in Hong Kong or Japan, wherever he was. And he said, I'm looking at new things. And I said, we can't come back from that. We can't. You can't. Like, I know you score a few goals and people forget things and shit like that. And Rooney, etc., etc. But... Pogba is way off the Rooney status in terms of how he's endeared himself to the fans and what he's achieved at the club. He's way off that to be able to pull that round for me. And you look at the way it ended last year, it was never going to happen. And the fact that, and then it was like, if you do make him stay, what sort of Paul Pogba are you going to be keeping? Okay, yes, he's injured. I don't think he's faking his injury. I think that his injury's probably been poorly managed as well. I think they've made him play when allowed him to play when he probably should have been resting, and it made the injury get worse, and hence it's taken this long. And two, he clearly wanted to leave from the summer. So we knew by keeping him this year, it was only going to be for 1 year. So, you know, and then they didn't even invest in and around that. So then they're making next summer already. And I know it seems like it's a way away, right? But you know how quickly time passes. We're nearly at the end of the year. Before you know it, it'll be Christmas. Then before you know it, it'll be Easter. Then before you know it, after Easter, it's almost the end of the season, and then we're on tour again. So that's this summer already is becoming more and more difficult because of the decisions or lack of decisions made in the last window, which, look at the last window, look what we said we needed. You know, we were nowhere near that, so we still got to backfill that, plus Pogba's going to leave. So it is a mess, and that's why it ain't going to, like you keep saying, it's going to get a hell of a lot worse before this gets better. It really is, because some proper decisions need to start being made at this football club. Until we start seeing proper people in charge making proper decisions, nothing's going to change regardless of who the fucking manager is. This is why I'm not really into the whole Ollie in, Ollie out thing, because it's my biggest issue, because, yeah, we're going to games week in, week out, and we're not seeing any improvement on the pitch. But the bigger thing, the bigger picture is this structure. It is this structure. So Pogba, I am not surprised he's going to leave. I don't even think we needed a rocket scientist to tell us that he's going to be leaving. We know that. He's definitely not going to go in January for me, because that means they would have to have someone lined up, and I don't think they will. And it makes no sense halfway through. Where's he going to go? Do you know, he hasn't been playing much or well, either or since the start of the season. It just doesn't fit. It doesn't work in January. So I think for the sake of that, like you said, I agree with you. I think he will wear a Man United shirt again. But it'll be till the middle of May, until the season finishes or whenever.
It's funny because there's so many things going wrong at Manchester United at the moment that they sort of get forgotten. But that decision with Pogba in the summer doesn't really get spoken about. But it's one of the biggest mistakes we've made this season, it's already backfired to force a player to stay of that quality. You know, some people maybe agreed with it, but the problem with it is that already it's backfired because he's not played anywhere near enough games and he's not made an impact on the season, and we didn't bring other midfielders in. I mean, what I would say to United, what they should be trying to do in January is sign Bruno Fernandes. It's, you know, I said it about Fabinho for years and we didn't get him and he went to Liverpool and he's brilliant. I just think, before we move on to Ollie, what this club needs to do is actually start listening to the people that care about it and actually have a wealth of knowledge about it. You know, when I first started the United Stand, a lot of people used to mock fan opinions when I used to say, why is your opinion not better than Van Gaal? He's dropping Herrera, he's playing Fellaini. Mm. We know Herrera should play. And fans just think, oh, because these foot managers are on loads and loads of money.
Yeah, they've got UEFA licenses that they know about football.
They know more than a fan, and it's bollocks. I've always said this. Fan opinion's the best opinion because you follow your club, you know your club from back to front, you know the way that your club should play, and you know what sort of players should suit it. But there's arrogance within football. It's not just at Manchester United that they think, oh, fans, all we're interested in is their money, they're all thick sheep. Mm. And actually, look, they should be listening, and they should listen, and they should go out and sign Bruno Fernandes. All this bollocks about signing fucking Declan Rice, who I think is crap, just because he's British, we're going to keep making the same mistakes. But look, let's talk about Ollie, because I'm sure people will be like, you know, you've not addressed that. I've got to ask the question. Why are you not Ollie out then? I mean, I literally just said it on a Flexor Rancho.
Yeah, that was one of the questions. So again, well, I may as well just answer it on here in case people don't watch both, so I will answer it. I just think Ollie's in a difficult situation because in order to stay on in this job, he needs results, right? That's the only thing that keeps any manager in the job. So there's always going to be the side of all the stuff on top of him isn't his fault. The fact that he's obviously been given a job isn't his fault. It's obviously great for him. But I think now, the only reason I'm Ollie in now is the main reason is we're not that far, like we're a couple of good results off being in the mix. And I know that seems deluded. I know it's like flex.
I think that's a reflection of the league, though.
That's what I mean. When you look at 100%, that helps us. Like, because the league is crap at the minute, the only two consistent teams, let's face it, are City and Liverpool. And you can actually throw Leicester into that mix now because no matter if they fall off, they fall off. And Chelsea. So the top four.
The top four's gone.
Top four looks like it's going to be top four. I know it's still early. It's not even Christmas and things can happen. But so that gives Ollie something. Put it this way. Cut a long story short. What would it take for me to be Ollie out? Get to the end of season and we finish mid-table below.
Yeah, I mean.
Do you see what I'm saying? Because I don't fully believe that they'll get someone in halfway through this season. We're getting to January now, right? That's going to change anything with that team. I don't think so. In three, four months to the end of the season. That's why I'm saying, do you know what? Let's see if he can give him the chance, give him a whole season. I would like it to work out for Ollie. I would like to get to another summer to see how they attack it, to really give him maybe until the following Christmas to really see, right, you've had two full transfer windows. With a bit more back in, hopefully, this summer. I would like to see that because the revolving door thing of change it is like as soon as it's gone wrong, and I know it has gone wrong, that badly wrong, we're going backwards, but give them the chance to turn it around until the end of the season at least. And if we do finish 13th, 14th, 15th and all that, yeah, it clearly hasn't worked out. But the way I see it is as well, is why I'm not really getting too wrapped up in the Ollie in, Ollie out thing, is that the club clearly back him. Solskjaer will not get sat up. I will put this out there. I will put this on the line. I bet you any money Solskjaer does not get sacked this season, even if he finishes 10th, 11th, 12th. I bet you won't get sacked.
I agree with that. I don't agree with that decision by the club, but I know, like you, that's the way the club are going to go.
And that's why I'm not investing time and energy. Almost like you're saying about the Saudi thing. Yeah, all right. Oh, I'd be wicked if they come bringing the money in, and then, you know, how we spoke about it hypothetically, and then literally at the end of it, you're right, but flex is not going to happen. So I'm not even going to try and fester the energy into, oh, he's got to go. Rance is calling him Wally instead of Ollie and stuff like that, because he ain't going to go nowhere. Two, I don't believe by sacking him now we'll be in a better position. I think we'll be the same, if not worse. I don't see anything changing. So I just think when I say fully get behind them, I don't mean act like everything's all right and don't vent about how bad each performance is and what we need. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying blindly think Ollie's going to turn it around. I'm just saying, for me right now, I still think he needs a bit more time. I'm willing to give him a bit more time because we haven't gone past that threshold of we're completely... I know we're battling for top six, which sounds pathetic in itself, but that's where we thought we'd finish. That's where we thought we'd finish. Now it's like, fucking hell, are we even going to finish 10th mid-table? So, but I'm saying just play it out. We knew it was going to be inconsistent this season. We're going to see two or three wins on the bounce and then a loss and then one more win, then another draw, then a loss, then a win. It's going to be like that all season. Maybe because I was at peace with that before we even started that, I'm not feeling like, no, sack him now, change it. I don't see the benefit in that right now. I think we'll be worse off personally.
I'm not Ollie out because I think that if you sack Solskjaer, Woodward sacks him, he brings another manager in, Woodward should be sacked before Solskjaer. So that's one reason. Mm. And two, I also know he's not going to be sacked, so my appetite for it is that, somewhat,
yeah, exactly.
is somewhat wasted by going Ollie out when I know they're not going to do it. What I would say, though, is that he's not good enough. He's not good enough. No. Whether he can become good enough, look, everyone always deserves that opportunity, but he's consistently not good enough. He's an ex-striker who doesn't know how to attack as a manager and is a defensive coach. He's a contradiction. Mm. Everything he says is a contradiction. He's basically, I wouldn't say lied, but he's told half-truths in his whole time at United. His tactical nous is redundant. His second half performances, I don't know what they're doing at half time. And I don't think in the long term he's going to be the right man for Manchester United. I think he's a specialist in inconsistency, which everyone will be going, well, why are you not Ollie out then? And as I said, the unfortunately, I do agree with Flex that if you did sack him and brought Allegri in, we'd be asking for him to be sacked in a year.
Yeah.
I think if Brendan Rodgers came in, he'd have problems because of the structure of the club. I can't keep repeating this enough. The problem with Manchester United is the people who are running the club and the day-to-day business are absolutely inept and they are not good. And it's like anything, isn't it? You know, you can have, as Flex was saying now, you can have the best IT consultant in the world, but if the people are running the business are rubbish, then the best IT consultant in the world is going to lose his job or he's going to fail. So that's what I feel about United and Ollie. But I do think that we can almost... The sad thing is, if I was in charge of United, I probably would say to Ollie, you've got a month to save your job. And I'm not just talking about results, I'm talking about the way you play. You know, the way you're playing is abysmal. You're not creating enough chances. It's boring. This counter-attacking cowardice football has got to change. You've got 1 month to go back to what you did in the first 3 months, and if you don't, you're gone. Christmas, you won't be here. That's what I'd say if I was in charge, because I still think that... I think top four's gone. I think it's dissimilar to Mourinho last year, where let's sack Mourinho and have an outside chance of top four, which we nearly did. Top four's gone, but what's not gone is the route to the Europa League. We could win the Europa League and get in the Champions League. We're basically through the group and we haven't got to play knockout football till February. We've also still got the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup to get into the Europa League. So the season isn't dead. I think the Premier League top four is dead.
Yeah.
But there's still opportunities there for United to try and sort it out. We've got to be sorted by February to have a proper run at the Europa League, because ultimately I think the only thing that's going to stop us there is Arsenal, and obviously you can beat Arsenal.
No, I think the team would drop down from the Champions League, pump us up, to be honest.
Well, yeah, you're right, actually.
When it gets to fucking quarterfinals, mate, someone drops with Ollie,
if we stick with Ollie, like you say, I don't think we'll be in Europe. So we're going to waste the whole season and next season, and he'll be here next season and he'll fail next season. So I think...
You think a manager will come in and get us top six then?
Well, I don't know. I don't, the thing is, I'm not... This is not me. This is not me. I always have a solution. And I have a solution, but I know United won't do that solution. The solution is a director of football and a change of the restructure of the club, and a proper football person looks at that. But there's just huge issues within United. I mean, there's even rumours about, like, the fitness side of things. Remember Ollie was like, oh, they're so unfit under Mourinho, I'm going to have a proper summer with them. And he's had a proper summer with them, and they still look... I mean, we're fading in every second half, we fade.
Yeah, I don't know what he
said. That's fitness.
I don't know what he said. All the negative things that you said, yeah, are true so far. On the current evidence, tactically inept, second half's always shit, not creating chances, style of play is poor, bad substitutions, You know, but I always like to play devil's advocate. Let's try and pick out some positives then of anything you can see. Can you tell me anything positive you can see? The free signings?
I like Anthony Martial.
Okay, back at number
Martial's,
nine.
Yeah. I think Martial's change, and I know he got a lot of stick at the weekend, but I thought that was ridiculous. He's getting no service.
That's Townsend just fucking being an idiot.
Yeah, the running off the ball, the hold-up play, I think. And then let's not forget, Martial's only played about five or six games this season as well.
Okay, so Martial at number nine. Dan James, is he a positive?
No, not for me. I think Dan James is a good signing, but I think people are getting absolutely carried away. I think he's actually played quite poorly in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. He got one as a penalty against Chelsea, but you know, but understandably poorly because he's only just... he's young, early 20s, and he's come up from the Championship. But people are talking like him like he's the next bloody Ronaldo, and he's not.
Well, literally the next gigs. Does he excite you?
He does, but I still think he's got a lot to learn, and it's still going to be hit and miss as to whether he learns.
Okay,
it,
so a half positive. Has Wan-Bissaka been positive for you?
Yes.
Although it was an obvious signing, has he been good? Has he made us better in that position?
Yeah.
So that's a positive. Maguire. I actually think Maguire's been... just okay, to be honest. I don't think he's been amazing, and he hasn't been shit. I think
he's not been as good as I thought Maguire was going to be. That's what I would say.
Yeah, actually, let's talk about Maguire. Sorry, just quickly.
I just think with Maguire, I mean, this goes back to Solskjaer. I just think with Maguire that you spend £80 million on one of the best players in the air, and he's done nothing in the air.
No, he hasn't.
Set pieces, corners. Yeah. We had loads of corners against Bournemouth.
Yeah, we never scored from him, but we never looked dangerous from him at all.
We just don't know what we're doing.
No. So again, that goes to coaching. But do you think that he has been a good addition and going forward will continue to be a good addition?
I don't think him and Lindelof work. I think with Tuansebe, it could work
quite
well.
A lot of people are talking about getting rid of Lindelof as well. Well, not from the club, but just from starting.
They don't work.
Emergence of Scott McTominay. Do you see anything in that?
I don't know yet. I think he's been one of our best players this season, but my problem with United, and this goes across the whole lot, is that when Scott McTominay has a good game against Chelsea or Liverpool, is that would he be having that good game for West Ham? You know, is he a West Ham Premier League midfielder or is he a top four midfielder? We don't know yet because when United players do well, they're so inconsistent. We don't know whether they're potentially top four players.
Billingham had his number against Bournemouth.
Or whether they're mid-table. When a United player plays well, we don't know whether they're top four players or whether they're just mid-table Premier League players playing well. Because Mark Noble plays well for West Ham, but we know he's a mid-table midfielder. So it's hard to gauge what a good performance is for United at the moment.
Yeah, but he's
but he has been a positive,
He definitely has been a positive, I'd say. But I agree with we don't know how long that's going to last or where he's going to end up as a player. Obviously, people... so maybe he's a future United captain or he's coming into his own, showing what he can bring, but it's still early days. Now I'm clutching. That's pretty much it.
Brandon Williams has been a positive.
I was just about to say Brandon Williams.
But it's very early days.
Does he play ahead of Luke Shaw for you?
No.
Luke Shaw comes
back. No, I don't get where people are at with this, and I don't get where people are at this. The biggest thing is to send Ashley Young off on holiday forever. That's what needs to happen. But you do need two left backs. Yeah. So you've got Luke Shaw and Brandon Williams. Yeah. Let them fight it out. Yeah. I don't see why. Oh, play him over Luke Shaw. Luke Shaw's shit. This is a mentality that's creeping into football that I don't like. Luke Shaw's fat shit. Get rid of him. And I'm like, you need two left backs. And I like Luke Shaw. Now, Brandon Williams might have a higher potential threshold and maybe he will be our first choice left back. But, you know, he's also a very young kid who's barely played a couple of games and everyone's like, play him every week. You know, he will have bad games.
Yeah, so... he will, because he's young. The thing I say about Shaw is, which we'll talk about Shaw now, is he's been a bag of potential for...
he's injury prone, isn't he?
6 years now. How long has he been at United about that? No, before... it's all right, it's by him? Yeah.
No,
just was, after.
He came in with Van Gaal.
Van Gaal, didn't
and
he?
Herrera.
Yeah, so that's what, 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years he's been there. And... he's supposed to have kicked on from then. Yes, injuries as well. But even away from the injuries, when he has had a consistent run, he's had patches of good form. And I just want to see more from him. I always keep saying I want to see more. And if we got that same energy for Rashford, who's in his fourth season, fifth season, whatever, we have to scrutinise him in the same way and say, you're not doing good enough right now. You're reluctant.
But then again, I think Luke Shaw last season won two or three Player of the Month awards. So
yeah.
But I think the problem with Luke Shaw is that
sometimes, or Rashford can do that because he scores a few worldies, and then it's like you get the. I don't know. I just think I look at other left backs and I think they are consistently doing shit. I look at
the problem with Luke Shaw is that he's injury prone. He is injury prone. Exactly. I mean, no one's mentioned Luke Shaw's injury. I think he got injured the same time as Martial.
He did. He got injured in the same fucking game, and he's not even a hint of being back. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. So massive amount.
How bad was that?
You know,
that was like 2 months ago.
Pogba. And if we didn't have Brandon Williams coming through, we'd be having to put up with
Ashley Young or Rojo.
And it's the same with Dalot.
And Dalot, yeah, I was just about to say that. Where's he been? Like, what?
Injury prone.
This is what I mean, man. I just want proper top-notch man in these positions. I look at all the other teams and they've got it. I look at Chilwell at fucking Leicester. Like, you might even argue that he's not as good as Luke Shaw individually or whatever, but what I'm seeing of him, he is. He is. Brandon Williams.
But this goes back to... this goes back to the structure and the recruitment of the club that, you know, all right, the Luke Shaw injury thing is probably because he had that bad injury and it's weakened muscles in other areas in the recovery and he'll always be injury prone. But Dalot was bought injured. Eric Bailly was bought after 3 different injuries in 1 season, the season before we bought him. You know, how many injuries do Liverpool get?
That's what I'm saying, man. It's bollocks.
It's not luck. It's fitness, coaching
and buying the right recruitment is the key. Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're looking at these players... we've got a bag of injuries. Why are we taking gambles? Why are we taking chances? We've had that with Jones his whole fucking career as well. It's the same thing. Yeah. So I just want proper specialists in these positions. And Wan-Bissaka's a good start in that. I think Maguire...
But you name... I'll go back to you then on positives because tactics is... You know, I think, you know, some people say, well, is it the players? Because would a different manager be getting more out of these players? And I'd say 100%. I looked at that team against Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And all right, we haven't got Pogba and Ashley Young's at left back. Yeah. But apart from that, that team should go and beat Bournemouth. And I think if you put Klopp in charge of that team for Bournemouth, he would have won the game with those players. And yet Ollie struggles to do it. So, you know, where's the positive tactically? When was the last time,
mate,
you know, you watched United and went, that was a good performance?
Norwich. And that...
But even then we dropped off in the second half, didn't we?
Dropped off in the second half. First half, very impressive. But I refuse to get too carried away with it because it's Norwich. We should be doing that, you know. And on top of that, because I was watching Norwich live, I was like, they really are poor. Like, they're shit on the ball. They can't string more than 2 or 3 passes together. Half of the time, they were giving us the ball because they were that bad. So, all right, cool. And Martial came back and was doing really well. Positive tactically. The last time I've seen us play well is... I haven't seen us play that well all season, to be fair. Everyone bangs on about the Chelsea game. We played shit. I'm fed up with talking about that game. The first 20 minutes, I was sitting in my chair, fucking worried. I was like, oh my God, we're getting played off the park. First game of the season. Tammy Abraham hits the post after fucking 5 minutes. That should have gone in, or on another day it does. We got a penalty against the run of play. Or just before the penalty, we started to put a few moves together. Got the penalty at the right time. Even after the penalty, they hit the bar. Should have scored again just before half time. Then we came out, hit them on the break, and then the game was over. Then they kept making mistakes. So... I don't buy that whole, it was a great performance. Wolves was the second game. We started very well, got our goal very well, then completely dropped off. So it was shit. Then it was Palace at home, lost. Then I can't remember after that, but it was obviously continually worse.
Drew with Southampton, didn't we?
Drew with Southampton, 1-1 from winning.
10 men for 20 minutes.
10 men for 20 minutes, brings on Mason Greenwood for like 7 minutes near the end. Then we beat Leicester 1-0.
Yeah.
Matic had to get taken off because he was horrendous. Then Fred came on and shored it up, but we got an early penalty. And to be fair, it was a bit of a, not shootout, but Leicester looked the more dangerous. Dominating possession, getting on the ball, just couldn't make that big, big chance. We defended decently, to be fair. Kept Vardy quiet. Then it was a common theme. Then Newcastle away, wasn't it? Lost. Probably missing out a few in between, but... It's just been Arsenal. The big games, and then you're looking at those big games, the Liverpools and the Arsenals. Well, the Liverpool game, like I said, everyone was saying, yeah, you can see some positives. We were resolute, we were robust, but they couldn't break us down. Liverpool, the best team in the fucking world, literally the best team in the world. And what did they do? What did Mane do? What did Firmino do? That's all I kept hearing. Well, fuck that. One, it's Liverpool at home, so it's a given that the players are going to put in more. Like, that's default. And two, like you said, we played 5 at the back and we parked the bus. We didn't have no chances either. So we stagnated the best team in the world, which is the mentality of a small team. So, all right, cool. Arsenal is as bad as us, and we still can beat them. So,
and that Chelsea game on Wednesday.
And Chelsea, that's null and void as well. They fucking played a bunch of reserves.
And it was a penalty and a worldy free kick, wasn't it?
There you go. We didn't have nothing. The closest we came to scoring was McTominay from that set piece when they rolled it across the floor and it went just over. But it's harsh, but it was off target. Martial had the shot off target. That's all I remember in that game. So, you know, where is the turnaround? And I know this sounds completely contradictory to obviously what I'm saying earlier, because like what you said, where it's like, well, then people say, Mark, why are you not only out there? Look at all the things you just listed, which is true. They're all. I get why people are only out. I'm not saying that, no, you shouldn't think that. You get behind your mat. I'm not saying that, because the evidence is there. That's what I'm saying. It's self-evidence. I just don't know with this structure. I don't trust this board to the point of the right manager. I don't trust it, Mark. I don't trust it. And it's sad as a fan, because then I'm slipping into, well, I'll just put up with it because I don't trust it, which is kind of what people were saying with Jose. Just, well, who are you going to get? Well, who are you going to get? And then it's like, I don't know, it just deflates you, because it's like you are in a catch-22 as a fan. You either trust the process and you're like, what am I trusting? I feel like a mug. I can't see anything. I'm blindly in love. Or you jump ship knowing you don't trust the people at the top to make the right decisions because they've been getting it wrong four times over. We're fucked as fans. It's a horrible position to be in. Knowing as well that your owners who are bleeding your club dry have no intention of selling. What have we got to... Sorry, guys, listening to this podcast, if you're at home on your way to work, it's Monday morning. It's Thursday morning, you're knackered and you thought, let me put this on for a bit of positivity. I'm sorry. I am sorry. But that's how it is.
We're living off that Chelsea result as well, because that 4-0 win, if we hadn't had that, we're 10th in the league at the moment. But actually, it's only because of goal difference, we're not 14th. So,
exactly.
We're living off that fake result.
But
on
saying that though,
day.
Mark, and this is why football's a funny game, and I want to say this before we finish off, right? When we were just above the relegation, like that Norwich game, I remember biting my nails like, before the players were coming out, I was like, this is so massive, because if we lose this, we are literally just out of the relegation zone on goal difference. Like, how embarrassing is that? But we won it and we went up to like 7th. Just like we then lost against Bournemouth and we went down to, say, what, we 10th now, aren't it? 11th. Like, it is fine margins, and we're going into a period where Brighton at home, you think we should probably win. Sheffield United away is fucking difficult. God knows what will happen there. But then after that, there's a few winnable games, and it's like, we're always a stone throw away from...
But they're not winnable,
the
are they?
So crap.
Because, you know, Brighton at home, Brighton are above us in the league.
Above us,
Sheffield United are above us in the league. And Villa are a decent side, so...
Yeah, true.
We've got to... I said after the game against Bournemouth, without ranting, I just said, we need to accept we're not Manchester United. We're only Manchester United in name. We're a mid-table
club.
Oh,
100%.
We're consistently a mid-table
club. I wasn't even... That's why, against Bournemouth... When I was doing my match, I wasn't even that mad. Even the fans I interviewed, Mark, they weren't even shouting and screaming. It has become, I think, that acceptance. And it's not lowering expectations. It's just understanding where we are as a football club. Because like you said, I think that's the truest statement. We are Man United by name. Now, that is it.
I think the thing is as well is that if the, you know, you've got to take a fall to get better, but the biggest myth that's out there is that Mourinho got sacked because he couldn't get us top four. He didn't get sacked because we were mid-table. And in 8 months, we've gone from being a team that was struggling to get top four under Mourinho and we sacked him, to a club that is now struggling in the mid-table. There's been this massive drop-off and there's no explanation as to why. Like, we shouldn't have dropped off that much, and the club are trying to sell that. They're trying to say, well, in the future we'll be back, but in the 3-year plan was about being a title contender. It wasn't about getting back for top four. And I think the 3-year plan is now to get top four. The drop off is absolutely unacceptable, and also people will take a drop off if they can see what's happening. But what is happening?
You're getting nothing to buy into.
There's nothing to buy into. You know, there's a couple of players coming through, but the formations are shit, the tactics are shit. There's no confidence. It's just a statement. United will be back in 3 years. Based on what? Like, you don't spend enough money. You haven't got enough good players. The coaching doesn't look good enough. The chief executive's inept. The owners are inept. So where? You know, people aren't stupid. Anyone can say it, you know. I'm going to be a billionaire in 3 years' time. How are you going to do it then? Well, I don't know. It's just going to happen.
Oh, mate, this is not what we wanted on Tuesday morning.
Well, it's good to get it out. But look, that is the situation. And, you know, what I would say is that for anybody who's listening, you know, maybe somebody's got a genius idea how they solve this, because I don't have one.
Mm.
People keep saying, oh, you know what, Stan, you should tell people not to go to a game. You should start doing marches bollocks. And this, that and the other. And I was like, I've been doing this long enough to know that that would cause more trouble than it's worth, because people would be like, oh, look at United Stand thinking that they're voicing the fans.
Exactly, and we don't, we're not.
Like, we've got a fragmented fan base.
That does annoy me when people go, look at these idiots who think they represent us. And I think that's the key. We represent fans who want to come and have an opinion. They're the only fans we represent. We don't represent the generic what people think or what people say. We give people a platform to say what they want, and then obviously we have our own opinions. So that whole, you don't represent me, well, guess what? I don't ask to represent you. That's fine. Like, do you know what I mean? We represent fans who want to have an opinion. That's the difference that I don't think people understand about fan channels. I saw one guy on a Sunday supplement having to go at AFTV and fan channels in general. And just, you know, these are the same mainstream media who fucking got Big Sam the sack by fucking setting him up. Same mainstream media that feed the racist narrative when talking about Raheem Sterling buying a house and another player. You know, it's the same media doing this bullshit. So, you know, the same talk sport that, like I said earlier in the show, in this podcast, feeds the narrative of, should Fingy get sacked, ring in and let us know. You're feeding it, so shut up. They don't want to blame fan channels for this because we allow fans to have an opinion, saying that we force hate. I'm not saying they said it about United Stand, but that is the negative thing about fan channels that is out there, and I just can't stand it. I just can't stand it. I get that people don't agree with fan channels, and that's fine, because they might not think that that's their way that they want to express themselves. I don't want to go on the camera so someone can see my face and watch me moan. Cool, that's fine. But it's the same geezer or girl, like I said, in the WhatsApp group, in the group chat with everyone, saying it, sending memes. Ah, look at this, Lukaku fell over. Ah, he's shitting, he's like, he's still doing it. You're just doing it in a different way. So, you know, it's preference, and that is what I can't understand. That's what I don't like.
Cool. Okay, well, we'll stop it there. Please do, if you've listened to the end, make sure you're subscribing on whatever platform you're on, and if you're on iTunes or whatever, you can give us a 5-star rating. That would be really appreciated. But really enjoyed it. It is the situation, as sad as it is, and thanks for listening.
Yep, thanks for having us. Thanks for listening, and it's good to come back, and we'll keep going, man.
Make sure you check us out on United Stand YouTube, fan cams, match reactions.
And Christmas party's coming soon.
Christmas party's coming soon. I don't know how we do that on here, but...
No, we'll put the link out on the descriptions when we put out the tweets to say come and listen, we can put it on there. But just make sure you're aware of it. Keep checking it out on the YouTube videos. That the links will be in all the descriptions and all the videos, and we'll see you guys there, man.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening.
Done. Yep.